John Lovett. We've got a great show for you tonight, but first, let's get into it. What a week. On Monday, Trump, alongside vaccine denier RFK Jr., signed an executive order aimed at reducing the number of vaccinations recommended for children and delaying the shots they do receive over a longer period of time. Why? Well, let's have Dr. Trump explain it.
Mr. President, I think I heard you say that the MMR vaccine for measles, mumps, and rubella is quite lethal. Is there any evidence of that?
I've heard is that there are some people that say it is that way. And I say, well, let's say there's a 5% chance of it. Let's split it up.
Now, he's not saying who he heard it from, but as a hint, imagine it's Tom Waits if he swallowed a bike chain and loved cholera. Trump also made this odd claim.
I saw this early on, and I've seen proof of it, where they have a vaccination that looks like the size of a bottle of soda poured into a little child's body, and bad things happen.
Famously, the hardest part of being a parent is when you have to pour 2 liters of vaccine into your baby like you're filling an ice cube tray. For the record, children's vaccines tend to have about 0.5 milliliter, or 1/10 of a teaspoon worth of liquid. Oh, but that doesn't bother you, libs, but Trump puts 0.5 milliliter of liquid into a teenager on Epstein's Island and you all lose your fucking minds. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. It was a tough one, but you did okay. All right. Thank you for bearing with me. I thought it was an important joke, a moral joke. Trump repeated his claims Tuesday on Real America's Voice.
It's too much at one time. They
right.
give these
Agreed.
Massive. Did you ever take a look? It looks like a Coca-Cola bottle. You know, like they're pumping this massive amount of fluid into a child's body.
And then sometimes you get to the doctor and you ask for a Coca-Cola vaccine, and the doctor says, "Is a Pepsi vaccine okay?" And you're like, "Never mind, I'll die of measles." Trump also repeated his bizarre claims about the MMR vaccine.
MMR. Right. If you give them separately, the M, and the R. It's fine. When you put them together, they're sort of like a nuclear weapon, according to some.
Right then and there. Trump, what's the M? What's the M? What's the R? Tell us what you think they are. Right now. I'll vote for you. I'll support you. President for life. What's the M? What's the M? What's the R? Now, this is all just made up. There is no benefit to separating out the doses. It's actually been tried, and all that happens is a lot of kids don't get all three because you have to go to the doctor 3 times. It's not hypothetical. They actually tried this in Japan. The vaccines were split, and as a result, a lot of kids ended up with the fucking mumps. But don't worry. I'm sure Americans are more disciplined and better at following the rules than the fucking Japanese. See, that joke would have been unacceptable in Woke One. And now here we are, having a good time laughing about stereotypes. And I apologize. Republican Senator Bill Cassidy posted, quote, "I'm a doctor. This executive order is wrong. The president does not have the expertise to make these changes. Vaccines are overwhelmingly safe. Vaccines are effective. Vaccines do not cause autism." Cassidy voted to confirm RFK Jr. after accepting his reassurances that he wasn't anti-vax, even though he was proudly and consistently anti-vax. It would be like accepting Krang's assurances he doesn't want to conquer the earth and kill the Ninja Turtles. Bitch, that's his whole fucking thing. Krang's gonna Krang. Sounds like RFK Jr. too, a little bit. Kennedy also lied. He said he'd maintain the vaccine advisory panel's recommendations. He then fired all 17 members of the panel. He said he supported the childhood vaccination schedule, which has now been gutted. He explicitly said he would not divert or cut vaccine funding, then pulled billions from local vaccination programs and shut down $500 million in exciting revolutionary mRNA research, which holds the promise of vaccines for diseases from HIV to cancer. From the way RFK is acting, you'd think these are the shots that took out his dad and uncle. He did okay on that one too. Speaking of dangerous shots, in July, the New York Times reported that Trump flew on the old Air Force One while leaving Turkey because his new Qatari plane lacked the defensive capabilities necessary to protect the president. This was in response to what was reportedly a credible threat that Iran would fire a missile at the president's plane. A welcome change of pace. After a few days of eating Turkish food, you'd expect it to be Trump who's dropping the bombs on Air Force One. Now we learn, according to the Washington Post, that Trump was not on either plane. And after very publicly boarding the old Air Force One, the Secret Service secretly snuck Trump out of the other side of the plane and onto a catering truck, which you can see there. Oh my God, is this where food comes from? Is this a farm? Said Trump, marveling at all the snacks. The catering vehicle then covertly drove Trump to yet a third, smaller plane, which we can see there. That plane, which Secretary Hegseth had already publicly boarded, then flew to the United Kingdom. Interestingly, Secretary Hegseth was somehow stuck inside of a drink cart, but that seems to be unrelated to any kind of a security threat. Here's the thing. The unwitting journalists and White House staff aboard Air Force One weren't told about the threat or that Trump wasn't on the plane. What is he doing in there? Asked White House Press Secretary Stephen Chung around minute 90 of waiting outside Air Force One's good bathroom. When the press pool later asked the president why they had been told to close their window shades on the flight, Trump responded, quote, because you're probably on a dangerous flight because of the sleaze bags that we have to deal with, which are also the words I use anytime I fly Frontier. Trump then added, quote, but if I go, you go, right? Before suggesting that, quote, perhaps someday you want to change professions. This is what he said to journalists who had no idea they were basically used like rodeo clowns. Here's how they covered it on Fox News.
It reminds me a little bit of Taylor Swift in the middle of the Eras tour when she was going to the Chiefs game. Do you remember when they were sneaking her out in the popcorn cart?
Yes.
Twice. They did it again.
That was real. Oh, okay.
Do whatever it takes to keep Taylor Swift happy. She had those Eras Tour concerts. But nonetheless, the media outrage is crazy on this. Do what you got to do to keep the president safe.
One problem, Taylor didn't have a decoy tour bus filled with unsuspecting backup dancers that she thought might get hit by a rocket-propelled grenade. Also, the government does not have the right to use journalists as decoys like this without their knowledge because this is a democracy, and private citizens aren't expected to sacrifice their lives for the dear leader while eating a little bag of pretzels and drinking a ginger ale. When Bill Clinton flew into Pakistan in 2000, the White House also used a decoy plane, but that decoy was smaller so as to put fewer people at risk. Reporters and the president flew separately, and according to new reporting, the White House actually briefed Susan Page, then the president of the Correspondents Association, about the ruse in advance. Ironically, this was a rare time when a woman was warned about not being next to Bill Clinton on a plane. And speaking of travelers who put their needs above everyone else, according to passengers on a small cruise ship, Mark Zuckerberg's $300 million yacht did not respond to a recent distress call from a nearby vessel which had run out of fuel near the coast of Alaska. They reportedly ignored the distress signal because they mistook it for a suicidal teenage girl. A Meta spokesperson later said that Zuckerberg's yacht, called the Launchpad, did not hear the signal until after the vessel had been rescued by the passing cruise ship. According to a passenger on that cruise, after the captain announced that Mark Zuckerberg's yacht had not responded, quote, there was near unanimous booing. Everybody on board then had a good laugh and died of hantavirus. All right, we have got a great show for you tonight, and we'll be right back.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
This episode is sponsored by the International Rescue Committee. Right now, there are millions of children struggling to survive in conflict zones around the world like Sudan and Gaza. They're not only facing hunger, but also unsafe water and little or sometimes no access to basic health care. That's why the work of the International Rescue Committee is more important than ever. They're on the ground in some of the most vulnerable places in the world, helping families access food, medical care, clean water, and support for new moms and babies. They even train local healthcare workers so care reaches those who might otherwise be completely cut off. You can help the IRC support even more children in need for a limited time. All donations are matched to Rush 2X, the emergency aid. Help save a child's life. Give now at rescue.org/rebuild. That's rescue.org/rebuild. Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Simply Safe. Here's the thing about traditional home security systems. They're designed for after the window breaks, after someone's inside, after the police come. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that after is too late. Simply Safe is the first system designed for before, stopping a break-in before it even begins. Smart AI-powered outdoor cameras detect suspicious activity at the perimeter and alert live U.S.-based agents to step in. SimpliSafe's agents assess the threat, intervene through the outdoor camera to scare off trespassers, then call 911 for dispatch. Our CEO recently had a SimpliSafe system installed in her home. She has outdoor and indoor cameras, motion sensors, window and door sensors. Her home is fully protected. Installation of the entire system was quick and easy. Everything has worked seamlessly since day one. It gives her peace of mind knowing that her home is now protected by SimpliSafe. SimpliSafe has been protecting your world for 20 years. Celebrate their anniversary and save 60% on your new SimpliSafe system at simplisafe.com/loveit. That's 60% off at simplisafe.com/loveit. Plus, when you order, write Love It or Leave It in the How Did You Hear About Us survey to let them know we sent you. Don't forget, there's no safe like SimpliSafe. We'll be joined by the great Lisa Traeger in a moment. But first, friends of the pod, we're very excited to see so many of you at CrookedCon. But a reminder, for those who have not yet bought one of the limited number of Friends of the Pod tickets for CrookedCon, they are selling out. There are just a few left. If you want to take advantage of the discount and get the perks that come along with being a Friend of the Pod, you have to grab your tickets now. If you're not yet a paid subscriber, you get this ticket for CrookedCon, but you also get subscriber-only content like Pod Save America Only Friends. You get exclusive access to a bunch of our Substack newsletters. You get Pod Save America Only tabs. You get a polar coaster with Dan Pfeiffer. There's a lot of great stuff that you only get as a subscriber, plus ad-free episodes, plus you're supporting independent pro-democracy media that you can trust. So please go to CrookedCon.com to get your ticket and to join Friends of the Pod. And if you're in LA, get tickets to see us live at crooked.com/events. We are always adding new guests. Check out our lineup, including Congressman Ted Lieu and the hilarious actor Jim Rash from Community and political commentator David Pakman from The David Pakman Show. They'll all be here on Thursday. All right. Now, please welcome to the stage one of my favorite stand-ups and the first person I would call if I was accused of murder is Lisa Traeger. Hi. Good to see you. Come on through.
Hell yeah.
Hi.
Hello. Hi.
Now, obviously, look, you're a triple threat.
Yes.
All right? Because you're a comedian.
Yeah.
You're a true crime aficionado.
Yeah.
And you're an international backgammon competitor.
And an actress.
And an actress.
No,
and
I...
And a dancer.
I...
And you were saying a trans swimmer.
Yeah. So,
but
I was on the swim team in high school,
were you
though.
Really?
Yeah. You could probably tell I just did butterfly. The most difficult one.
I was on one episode of Survivor, but my swimming was bad enough that it is often brought up to me in public. All right, now.
No, my dream is to do Survivor. I know you did it, and I still wouldn't learn how to build a fire, and I don't give a fuck.
Well, I'll tell you this much. Was it my problem? Surviving amongst the wild was not the issue so much as talking to people, which I feel like I should have known going in, but.
Well, my goal would be to be so annoying that people would drag me to be the goat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I wasn't annoying enough, I suppose.
Yes.
I was in that uncanny valley of being...
Usually they kick off a woman real quick, but...
Yeah, I have a feminine energy.
Yeah.
Now, back to you, backgammon, competitive, international, what?
Yeah, I did just play in the World Championships of backgammon, but I had an in because we were filming stuff, working on a doc podcast thing, so... I didn't have to pay the thousands of dollars that you have to pay. So the stakes were lower for me, but I was training with Mark Olson, a grandmaster, and he runs the World Championships and this like app. And so he trained me for a few months, not prepared. I was losing. I won one game against an engineer and that felt really incredible.
Wow.
And I played with people with decades of experience. I played with some of the world's best players, grandmasters. I learned a lot. And then I had two devastating losses, like humiliating. So I'm training for the New York tournament in January.
So we have a clip of you playing against...
Oh my God. Yeah, that's Mochy. Okay.
It's a world champion.
Yeah, it's really funny because I didn't know he existed. And then when I was there, every time I saw him, I was like, it's Mochy. But I never knew about that man before. Oh my God, this is so fun. I did lose, but he has the lowest error rate of any player in the world, which is 2 point something. Like they all are obsessed with him. He is really funny. Like he was so funny and silly, but he's a professional. And he was awesome, and I learned some really good moves from him.
And it was in Monte Carlo?
Yeah.
which is kind of where James Bond plays Baccarat.
Yeah, it's a tax haven for oligarchs, and it's pretty disgusting. I saw a yacht with a helicopter on top of it. I saw a lot of like rich children with iPads. I saw a lot of mini Birkin Kellys, a lot of sex workers who are not allowed to really speak.
So it sounds cool.
Yeah, there was a lot of marble, downsides? But everyone was hot, like a lot of hot people. I love, like, the valet guys were like the hottest guys I'd ever seen.
So just to back up.
But I'll tell you, it's so expensive there. I had a chicken Caesar salad, a Peroni, and I got an iced coffee to go, and it was 89 euros.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's exclusive.
It's like a fucked up place.
But wait, so that's...
And of course the Russians are the most tacky on the whole goddamn strip of land.
She almost goes without saying. But so,
yeah.
Backgammon, you have an obsessive quality. You get very into something.
Yes.
Because, like, you know, it can be a public murder, or it can be a game of sorts. So, you're able to play competitive backgammon. Were you always playing backgammon?
So I always played with my father. Like, I've been playing backgammon my whole life with my family, and then my nephews play. So, like, I've always played casually or like here and there.
And then what always are the triangles for?
That's like how you move. It's like each step, and you're trying to get your babies all the way home. And you're trying not to get hit by the other people, or you have to start over. But like, I was playing with my dad casually, and I met a lot of people that like learned with their grandparents and parents. And then once you start learning the game, which I'm new to, that's when you're like, oh, my dad had no idea what's going on. You know, you realize your parents are flawed. but like, yeah, we would play too safe. Like, you have to take risks. So I've learned like gameplay and how to count stuff. Like, I've just learned way more in the last 3 months than I have in my whole life. So I always thought like, oh yeah, I love backgammon. But now it's like, oh fuck, I'm competing against like gambling degenerates, and then people so deep in the spectrum, they're like counting like you won't believe. Like, yeah. Won't believe it.
A lot of people who got all the doses of the MMR. A lot of people are like, extra MMR. I have a backgammon tournament. I got to hit me with that rubella vaccine. I got to be on my best game. I want the rotavirus one. I want hep B.
And it's like a lot of people, like, yeah, they move so smooth. It's sexy. Because I was losing, but the people were building their primes, and it does look beautiful. And then you learn about the subcultures. I bought a necklace. I bought like a backgammon necklace.
Wow, there's always merch.
Yeah, there's
you go,
always.
You get deep into something.
Well, and I had
merch.
To buy new dice because in the middle of a game, this girl comes up to me that I know from New York, and she goes, you can't play with those dice because my dice had holes in them, which isn't aerodynamic enough. And so you have to use precision dice where they're painted on. So I did have to buy two sets of dice.
Wow.
Because you want to do separate color. Yeah, like I was an asshole, like thinking I was going to come into these tournaments and like do well to these things. Like they've been dedicated for years.
Some part of you thought that you were going to be like Bobby Fischer.
No, never.
Like, you're going to walk in searching for Bobby Fischer, like you're like, you know, checkmate, or whatever the fuck.
No, because I started working with Mark Olson, one of the grandmasters. So once I started working with him and reading his book, I realized I have a lot to learn. And so I went in open-minded, but then, and even some of my losses, I learned a lot. I didn't make errors. Like, I was doing well. The ones I was upset about are where I was sloppy, bad, forgot my lessons. I don't want to let my teacher down.
Wow.
Deep down, I just want to do a good job, you know?
Honestly, that feels like the way you said that is a natural segue into another thing you got obsessed with is heated rivalry.
Changed my life. You're laughing at me. They're laughing. It truly changed my life.
So, because it's such a good show.
Yeah.
Because of it, because of the sexual chemistry between the two leads
and
the hockey.
Yeah.
But you've like... It's like affected, like you've taken on hobbies because of this now.
Yeah, because I'm Russian, but I realized like, oh, I didn't know all the words he used. And then I was like, I should be doing more Russian television. So I've been working with a Russian professor weekly to like strengthen my Russian. And it's actually helped my relationship with my parents because now my mom texts me in Russian and I'm learning how to read and write and it's all coming back to me. So that's been really great. I hadn't read in like 12 years. I've now read like 30 books this year, just like roaring
because
through.
Because it heated up, right?
Yeah, because she has 6 books in the series. And then she has 2 other gay hockey books. And then that led me to gay historical books by Kat Sebastian. And like they're set in the 50s in New York. And then of course, now I'm reading James Baldwin. I mean, I can't believe what happened to my life. It's like so cool.
So just on like a given week, you're reading James Baldwin, learning Russian, mastering backgammon.
Yeah.
Like, Like, you think you're better? Wait, you think you're better than me?
No, but also, like, I started hypnotherapy because then I realized I want love, and then I was, like, stopping myself from it because I was so inspired by Heat of Rivalry. So now I'm, like, I don't know if I'm looking for love. I'm mostly on field, but I have, like, fucked some freaks, and... But I'm on the journey, so I hadn't dated in like years. So I'm like dating. I'm more fun. I quit smoking weed all day every day, so I'm not a daily weed smoker anymore. And it was all because of Jacob Tierney and these boys and Rachel Reed. God bless her.
Because you were vaguely insulted by the fact that sounds like quite depressed. seems like you were in actually a crisis. You were in a state of crisis, and
this show got me out.
And Connor's story reaches down and just pulls you up and says, "My Russian accent is embarrassingly good compared to what yours should be." And now you're reading James Baldwin and going to Monte Carlo.
Yeah. Yeah, making eye contact with baristas. Like, I'm just out.
Now, in all.
But I was also inspired by just like such a beautiful love story, and they did such a good job. And in terms of like making television, such a small budget, such like only in 36 days, and like they just did something so incredible. I love that.
Do you think that do you think Heated Rivalry had to be the thing, or were you about to start getting better and something was going to be like, if you had happened to click over into a different show, if you'd watch Widow's Bay, would you be in the Cape right now learning how to fucking
was just in P-Town for the first time living. And I was crying in P-Town imagining Shane and Ilya there for the first time. Cause I was like, they're going to like, they don't even know the gay life ahead of them. Like I was just like imagining them in the back of a pedicab, but like loving life in P-Town.
Have you seen there's been this, a story of a woman, a Disney adult who travels following Peter Pan around Disney in too obsessive a way. Do you worry that that's something in your future? That all of a sudden Connor's story will like kind of open a window shade and there you'll be being like, I'm back, a game of backgammon perhaps?
No, because I have too much respect for his craft. I'd leave him alone. But I plan on like, I think about this all the time, what my life would be like and the sliding doors if I never watched Heated Rivalry. I really think about it because my life is so different than it was before I watched it. And yeah, I'm curious if I would still be smoking weed all day, every day and just depressed and not fucking people off the internet, you know?
And that,
texting my mom in English, you know? Yeah. Like I wonder.
Yeah, you'll never know. Sliding doors. Now you've hosted your podcast, That's Messed Up, for nearly 6 years.
We're about to hit 300 eps.
You go through every episode of Law & Order SVU.
Yeah, not in order, but the ones based on true crimes, yeah.
And you've become a bit of an expert in true crime. I feel like you only have really two settings. You're not an analyst. You're a digital switch. Either you're not in or you're 100% focused. And it feels like true crime is something that like has you.
It just had me for a while. Like I always, like in fifth grade, we went to Niagara Falls, me and my family, and I forced them to take me to the serial killer wax museum. Mm-hmm. And all the photos, like they're so upset and I'm quite happy. But I thought I was going to be a forensic psychologist. So it started a long time ago, but I'm like too fun of a person to do that. And so... I found this new way in where I study a lot and I've come up with my own theories on things and like, yeah, I learned a lot, but it has changed my brain and I ruin the vibes of social gatherings often.
Not my gatherings. And you know what that sound means? It's time for a game we're calling Good Riddance. Hope you had the crime of your life.
Oh.
Where we're going to go through a series of questions about true crime. First up, true or false, the official scientific term for police analysis of fingerprints is dactyloscopy.
I don't know. It sounds like a dinosaur. I don't know. I'm going to say false.
No, it's true.
Okay.
And the broader study of fingerprints is called dermatoglyphics.
Cool.
I learned that just now. As a follow-up, what Australian animal has fingerprints that are nearly identical to humans, even under an electron microscope?
I mean, I want to say, I'll say koala.
Correct.
Okay.
Can you believe that?
No, I was about to say platypus to like be cooler. Okay, I'm glad I said koala.
The duck-billed platypus looms so large in the mind of a child.
Yeah.
And you don't come across them at all once you're an adult.
I've seen them once. In Australia.
Oh, that's where they keep them.
Yeah. And the beanie baby is one of the more powerful beanie babies.
Oh, yeah.
The purple one.
A lot of energy in that beanie baby. Next up, proposed in 1963, the McDonald Triad are three behaviors said to be predictive of serial violence. What are those three behaviors?
So it's like what people, okay, like killing animals.
Correct. That's one.
Being a peeping Tom. No. Killing animals, being a dumb bitch. What else? I don't know, setting fires, arson.
Yes. That's two of three.
Arson, animals, not peeping Tom, huh? Like isolated, like a loner.
The third is wetting the bed, which is like...
Well, that's actually, I'm really curious because like that's the sign that someone's being abused.
Right.
So I wonder if that's kind of connected.
Because right.
There's a criminologist that I love where he's like, you can be born a socio and that's like having a gun, but then abuse is the trigger that pulls it. So I wonder if that's the wetting the bed. I wonder.
How many people do you have to kill over what amount of time to be considered a serial killer?
This is so funny because I learned this from episode 3 of Heated Rivalry. It has to be like over 3 days apart. Like it has to be more than 3 days separation of the killings.
It's three or more killings, but over the course of 1 month.
Oh, 1 month.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ted Bundy was arrested multiple times for what before he was finally pegged as a serial killer?
Oh, I thought it was going to be, he was like such a peeping Tom. I'm going to be terrible driver.
Correct.
Yeah.
He was a terrible driver.
Yeah.
That was what he got arrested for. Lisa Traeger, go to lisatraeger.com for live dates. Check out her special Night Owl on Netflix.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
And we'll be right back.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Hims. Losing weight is one thing, but feeling your best this summer, that's the real goal. That's why weight loss by Hims now offers access to FDA-approved Wegovy pill and Wegovy pen. Wegovy is designed to help you lose weight sustainably so you can show up this summer feeling like yourself. With Hims, everything happens online. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication will be delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary, and it doesn't stop there. Hims makes hitting your goals seamless by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and in-app lifestyle and nutrition support like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. With a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hims makes it simple to find a weight loss approach that fits into your world and your wallet if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. Ready to reach your goals? Visit hims.com/loveit to get a personalized, affordable plan that gets you. That's hims.com/loveit. hims.com/loveit. Weight loss by Hims is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit hims.com. Love It or Leave It is brought to you by SelectQuote Life Insurance. You know you need it, but you keep putting it off because you think it's complicated or expensive or that you'll live forever. Stop telling yourself you'll handle it later and take care of it today with SelectQuote. In 15 minutes, you could have coverage that fits your life and budget. Here's what makes SelectQuote different. Their licensed insurance agents work for you, not for the insurance company. They compare options across multiple carriers to find you the right coverage at the lowest price. They've been doing this for nearly 40 years and have helped over 2 million people find coverage. Even if you have health issues, they can help. High blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease. Their agents know which carriers will give you the best rate for your specific situation. If you're healthy, they can get you same-day coverage with no medical exam. Other brokers push policies that pay them the most. SelectQuote agents actually shop for you. SelectQuote, they shop, you save. Get the right life insurance for you for less at SelectQuote.com/loveit. Go to SelectQuote.com/loveit today to get started. And we're back! Please welcome to the stage... Emmy nominated from Hacks, it's Lauren Weedman. Hi, welcome. Thanks for being here. I'm so good to see you.
Like, oh my God, like a talk show.
Yeah.
It's
I've never done one, so this is my dream.
It's exactly like a talk show, somehow. It's nice to meet you. It's nice to have you on the show.
Okay.
So now, you are nominated for an Emmy for Best Guest Actress in a Comedy for your role as the mayor of Las Vegas in Hacks.
Mm-hmm.
Which of your other four guest star pals, Leslie Bibb, Caitlin Olson, Cherry Jones, and Laurie Metcalf, would you most like to see lose?
Mighty laugh. I hope they all lose, obviously, right? But Which ones? It's all the ones from Hacks, right?
Yeah, those are all the ones from Hacks. There's also Jamie Lee Curtis and Betty Gilpin.
I really wanted Jamie Lee Curtis to win because she seems so good. You know, like such a good person, like maybe learn about the other side of life.
Okay, I hate that for you.
You do?
Of all the people on this list,
that's
I want Jamie Lee Curtis to lose the most, and I'll tell you why.
That's what I was saying.
Oh, you do? You agree?
Yes, I was saying her too. I was saying I wish it could be her because she's had such a, you know, because she's so
good. Maybe cut down to size. I just feel like Jamie Lee Curtis wins an Emmy, it just goes on the fucking shelf. You know what I'm saying?
I think for all of them, they're all pretty accomplished. I mean, they're all pretty accomplished. One thing I thought when I found out, I was like, I'm sure I'm the only nominee who's driving like a 2009 shitty car that the AC just like went out on the way here.
Yeah.
You know, that is like, I'm fairly certain of that. And I'm like, how much does everybody have in their bank account? How much is it? Like, I'm sure, you know what I mean? Like, these are all women that are probably loved by others. You know, not that I'm just within their own home, like probably
somebody who's
like, how are you doing today, honey? You know, like I don't have those perks.
We should put up a big picture of you on a billboard and just says, she needs this.
Yeah. I feel like people sense that. People are like saying that to me already. They're just like, oh, Lauren. Oh God, you finally deserve it. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like this much less an asshole now. Like, now I don't look like an idiot. Oh, these are all your note cards.
You have your dress picked out?
Thanks for asking. No, I didn't really. I have like a stylist and stuff now. I know, which is so, it's embarrassing. I mean, sorry, I need to breathe it in. Like, I have a stylist and I like it and I deserve it. Yeah, but
yeah.
That's not.
But I think it must be like, you know, you've been. You've had a ton of guest star roles. You have been like fucking hustling.
Right.
And this is a moment where like you're getting like a ton of acclaim as like, you moved your hand.
Yeah.
You rejected
a
claim.
I don't know why. I'm just being moody. You're right. It's true. I'm glad for it. I'd already gotten in trouble with like HBO I had to do like a special media training thing, because they were like, you're not really mentioning like, you know, how happy, you know, the show and HBO and stuff like that. And I was like, well, I think it's a given. I wouldn't be being interviewed, right, if it wasn't for HBO. Like, well, it'd be nice if you put something in there, you know, instead of just like, you know, I'm adopted and I've had a lot of divorces. You know, they're like, could you really show the rest of, or I'll say like, nobody talked to me a lot of times on the set, but it's because I'm so old, you know, you're not supposed to do, you know, you have to.
No, you're supposed to do there's a set of rules you're supposed to follow.
Yes, but I don't like to reveal my more vulnerable emotions like joy. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I'm not going to be an asshole again and reveal that. And next thing you know, you're up there like, I'm so happy. And everyone's like, I bet you aren't now. And I'm like, you're right. Like, I want to keep my arms down and get ready for punches. Or arms up, ready for punches. That was the total opposite. Yes. God.
Right. If your arms are down, you're vulnerable.
Yes,
to the punches.
Yes, yes. I got it. I
think this is going well. Hey, yeah. Did any real life mayors inspire your character?
No, people ask me about that because I guess at the time of when the show first started, it was based on a little bit of the actual mayor. But I was the celebrity grand marshal of the gay pride parade in Vegas. Which I asked them if I could do that. It worked out well. I didn't put celebrity in there. They did. Anyway, but I got to meet the actual Vegas mayor right now. And she was, I liked her, but wasn't inspired. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That sounds harsh. I don't wish ill on her, obviously.
No, and no one thought you did, but you're just covering it
just in case, cover my bases.
No, like, I think people love to hear, I don't wish any ill, but you're fine. I think it's a great way to fix what you said, so you're in good shape. And I think, honestly, I feel like the media training is working.
It's working really well, I know.
I feel like you're coming across like a polished communications professional.
I know. I told him, don't worry about it. I'm a talker. Yeah.
Yeah, like, are you inspired by any real life mayors? No.
No. Politicians are so much like actors too, you know, just the ego of just like, I don't give a shit, I'm sitting here, you know, like there's a little bit of, I picked up on that.
Well, it's interesting though. That's funny to think about politicians versus actors, because they do have that thing in common, which is There's a neediness and an ego, mm-hmm. but also a fear of being seen as being demanding sometimes.
Right.
And so you get a lot of like, is it cold in here? You know, as opposed to it's cold in here.
Yeah. No, you don't want to come off as like stating something that you believe or that you actually feel. Yeah. I was a guest star on a show and Cory Booker was dating Rosario Dawson, right?
Is that right? That's right at the time, yeah.
And so he came on set to visit and stuff. And did he blend well. Like he was just so like, just jokey and funny and cute and wanted to be, you know, wanted to be a part of the whole scene, I guess. I thought he'd be in sitting in the back of a car reading books about history or how, you know, or about the water systems.
Well, maybe he's seen Heated Rivalry, and so now he's finally doing that.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't seen Heated Rivalry, and that sounds
it's beautiful.
Oh,
you're gonna love it.
I'm sure. I feel like there's something that I'm cramming all the Emmy stuff, so in case I run into people.
Oh, what are you watching?
are you gonna test me? I started watching Beef.
Beef.
Yeah. Beef.
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 Yeah.
Yeah.
Beef.
Beef.
I watched it actually when I was in Monte Carlo. I watched all of season 2 of Beef.
Well, that's a good way to use your time when you're in Europe.
Well, between 2 and 5 in the morning, that's what I was doing.
What? I think that's okay. I think that's all right.
Hey.
But, hey, what?
Does everyone here need help? What do you mean? You're just up watching Beef from 2 to 5 in the morning in
Does
Monte Carlo?
Yeah. Then I
when
would
are you sleeping?
I would sleep until 11. Then we would go to the conference room hotel around noon. And then we would work until 1:30 in the morning. And then I'd be back.
Wow.
But I need to unwind.
You got to unwind.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Can I unwind?
Well, we won't have to get into it. It's good. I like it.
It's good.
Yeah.
Shut up.
What don't you like?
I like it. I like it.
What shows do you hate?
What shows do I hate? There's none. There's none. I'm so in awe of what actors are able to do. And they always blow me away, the dedication.
Hell yeah. Somewhere in a PR executive HBO is like, I did my job today.
Yeah, exactly.
Get a little treat for me at the end of the day. Totally. A little double stuff Oreo for me because I did a good job today.
Yeah.
Does it feel different to be part of a show that is like, you know,
so successful, the show that's like,
yeah,
yes.
It's different, right?
Yeah, it is different because I worked on the show like, you know, maybe every season, maybe 1 or 2 times, or sometimes up to 3. But every time I'd go there, people were just getting better and better looking. First of all, season to season, everyone's teeth got brighter and everybody, you know what I mean? Like just
that happens on Drag Race too.
Right. Everyone starts making more money. Is that it?
And they come back with like veneers.
Yes. And everyone's just a bit more this and more sure of themselves and a little more competition of just like, I have my own special. I have 2 specials. I just shot them and I don't have a kidney. Like they're all like, I've done this. They're all really good people. I hope I'm being clear about that.
No, that's good.
Okay. But yeah, I remember the 4th season when I went to go work, they'd all just won a Golden Globe. Like, you know, they were just constantly like, oh, last night was crazy. Hi, Lauren. And again, that's not what they were really like. That's just a comedic portrayal.
For sure.
Yeah.
And that's coming across. Yeah.
Okay,
no.
Good. Yeah. Because usually I try to bounce if it's a joke, but people can't see me.
Yeah, give it a kind of little shoulders.
Yeah, yeah. A little like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it doesn't come across too serious, you know. But no, I think it's great. I mean, obviously, I don't think I'd be nominated if it wasn't such a hit. If people noticed it so much, because it was such a big hit, right?
I think it's like a testament, though, to how good you are on Hacks, and you are so fucking funny on Hacks.
Oh, thank you.
I just want to pay you a direct compliment.
Good. Thank you. Thank you.
So funny.
Thank you.
And you make such a like. I think sometimes there's like, especially like people that have like kind of when they show up as like a big famous guest star mm-hmm. and they make a meal of it. It's a little bit like, all right, out of the way. I'm trying to watch my show.
Right.
You know?
Yes. Yes.
But you bring such a like unexpected comedic energy to every scene you're in, and it's so. Every choice you make is so surprising and funny and interesting and not what I think anyone else would do if they were given that same role, which is and I think it speaks to that you're in the running with this group of like big time celebs.
Amazing.
Big celebs.
Yes, I know. It is sort of, I do feel like I snuck in where I'm just like, I was super shocked too.
And were you shocked?
Yeah, I wasn't. Yeah, definitely. And I got worried about how will I immediately, because I'm neurotic like that, where I was like, how am I going to take this all, like, take in so many compliments. Like, I'm like, thank you.
How did,
no, I can't, like, it's.
How was this for you?
It was good because I didn't know how you felt about me. Anyway, I couldn't quite read you. And so then when you're really like, I want to tell you something right now, I was like, oh, I think he means it. It felt like you meant it.
I did. Well, yeah. Honestly, I felt like I had to do that to get over whatever's happening between us.
Is it?
This is cool. First of all, there's got to be a part of you that's like, hey, like, I've fucking been here. I've been funny the whole goddamn, why, like, you know what I mean? Like, why, oh, you're noticing that I'm hilarious now? I've been funny the whole fucking time.
Yeah, well, I had some, you know, dips. But I guess what I feel like is that now I'm ready, like, even just dealing with doing publicity and that kind of stuff and stuff that I normally would be like, I don't know how to, like, I feel ready for it. I feel super grateful. Like, I do feel very, because I'm, you know, I'm 57 now. I am sort of like, wow, I feel... the first thought I had was like, oh my God, I feel a little bit less of an asshole. Because I felt like as a guest star, most of my friends who had to give it up, they're just like, we can't survive, you know, there's not enough money in this. And I was like, well, I'll just keep going because someday double sixes. Like I just kept, you know, even though I'm not making enough money, so it felt so nice to suddenly just not feel like an asshole, that it all had sort of accumulated, and that I got to do a part where they just let me do what I want to do. They give me, and there's some lines, but they really give me a lot of leeway, and I have a lot of pent up energy where I was like, oh, I could like cut me off when you want me, like I can go and go and go. So I was ready for it. That part was a good fit.
Now, how is, like, you were on The Daily Show?
Yeah.
In 2000.
Yeah. Ew. Not you, but ew, right? It's so long ago.
Yeah, yeah, time.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Ew, yeah, it's alarming every time.
It is a long
time. Yeah, totally.
I made a reference to Mayor Rudy Giuliani, and someone in the audience did say, I don't remember that. I'm 28.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, yeah, 28 isn't old enough to remember the stories I remember from the early part of my own adulthood.
Yes, now, yes, I've been through that.
What was it? What did you learn from that? Like, that was very early in The Daily Show. Jon Stewart had just taken over, I believe.
Yes, that's right.
What was it like? Like what?
Just a blessing. Well, when I first got there, people were like, I was, oh God, I'm like, oh, Lauren, what do you, when I first got there, people were saying like, there's not a lot of women on the show. They don't tend to do super well. Like, it's just not a great environment for that, but just be cool. Don't ask a lot of questions and don't, you know, touch him or that sort of thing. Or like,
sure.
Well, like, cause I wasn't like, here he comes, I'm gonna touch him. No, Lauren, I'm gonna touch him. I wasn't like insane.
It is a bad sign when someone at work tells you not to touch people.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's what I wanted to be clear. I wasn't actually told that till after I touched him. After I'd worked there a while, yeah. But no, I never had a TV, my first TV job. And so I suddenly went from like being a theater person to being in this like super cool show. And I was just had anxiety the entire time about not, but playing it too cool. I got brought into the producer's office because they were like, John feels like you're treating this like it's a walk in the park. Like you could take it or leave it. And I was like, he does? And I was like, well, I got to go tell him. And I see him like, John, and everyone's like, don't do that. Like stop going. And so I don't do that. Okay. I sit here and like, don't sit here. Don't come in unless you know, you have to come in every day, but don't come in every day. That kind of stuff where I was like, I found it really, hard to figure out where to be in that show. Though I always loved it, and I always loved John. I was also hungry for a note, always assuming I must be doing something wrong, so I didn't handle it that well, because they were, when she would say that to me, I'd be like, right, be more grateful. Okay, I gotta tell them more things about myself, I think. Okay, like I did every sort of wrong choice. It was great to be a part of that show, though I was always a big dummy. I didn't know who Kofi Annan was.
Did Kofi Annan know who Kofi Annan was?
Oh my God. That's what I always think when I say that.
And all right, we got it. Now, all right, we'll be right back.
Okay.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
Love It or Leave It is brought to you by Mint Mobile. When we were kids, summer meant freedom. No homework, no teachers, no school. And as adults, summer still means freedom, thanks to Mint Mobile's summer sale. And also, we assume you still don't have homework, teachers, or school either, which is pretty great. Right now, all of Mint's plans are $15 per month, even unlimited, so free yourself from big wireless and their gimmicks and gotchas, and switch to Mint for high-speed data and coverage on the T-Mobile 5G network. With Mint Mobile, you can bring your current phone and your number. You can choose from 3, 6, or 12-month plans and say goodbye to a monthly bill. You can ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile. It's so easy. You can sign up online and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/love it. That's mintmobile.com/love it. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/love it. That's it. There is no catch. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 months, $90 for 6 months, or $180 for 12 months plan required. $15 per month equivalent, taxes and fees extra, initial plan term only. Greater than 50 gigabytes may slow when network is busy, including up to 20 gigabyte hotspot. Capable device required. Availability, speed, and coverage varies. See mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's John. Last year, 2,500 people joined us at CrookedCon for conversations with some of the smartest organizers, least annoying politicians, and most interesting voices in politics about how to fix this mess. We're doing it again, November 5th through the 7th in Washington, D.C., with even more podcast panels and workshops. Plus, there will be drinks, which we'll need after the midterms, no matter which way they go. Get your tickets at CrookedCon.com, where we'll also announce the lineup. If you're a Friends of the Pod subscriber, a limited number of discounted tickets are still available. Get them before they run out. See you at CrookedCon.
And we're back. I want to mention first, you can catch up on the final season of Hacks on HBO Max before the Emmys, and you go to @Lauren_Weedman on Instagram for tickets to your show on August 28th.
Oh, yes, that's right. On the 29th. Oh, shit. I probably told you it was the 28th even.
And on either the 28th or the 29th.
In Hudson.
Come early on the 28th for the show on the 29th.
Oh, that's an awesome way to spend it. Thank you, yes.
And catch Lisa on Survival of the Thickest on Netflix.
Ooh.
Is exciting. All right. Now it's time for the rant wheel. Here's how it works. We spin a wheel wherever it lands. We talk about the, nope, that's how it used to work. Wherever it lands, that person rants for a bit, which will be all of us. The wheel serves no function when you actually think about it. We're in year 10 of this show, and we never cracked how to use the fucking wheel. It used to be the wheel had topics on it, which kind of makes sense, and it would land on there, but then that would just be the topic someone said they were going to rant, so the wheel served no purpose. It was fake.
Right.
Then we abandoned that altogether, and now it just has our faces on it.
But you don't want to let it go.
No.
That's good.
Let's spin the wheel. Land on, Lauren. What is your topic? You have 60 seconds.
I have 60 seconds. My topic is about how women are aging women. I know it's already like Nora Rooney, at least. When I was younger, I would make fun of women who were trying to, you know, still got it. I would make fun of that. Or if they were complaining all the time, like, you know, I need a special mat because my knees are, I'm allergic to broccoli or whatever. I just thought every weakness was like, oh my God. And now I realize how unfair that was. And I'm like, why wasn't it instilled earlier to show a little bit of respect for the elder wise ladies of the world? Like, why is it always like, why? I'm part of the problem. I'm part of the rant too, is that I'm sick of my own judgment about, like, if I put on like a little bit too much makeup, I'll be like, wipe it off, old lady. What are you trying to prove? You know? And I think, well, I don't want to feel that way about myself, but there's, you know how it is. And even in the dating world too, I have friends who are the same age on the same dating app, but will never run across each other because they've set their age thing so much lower, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for listening.
That's a stare.
I remember when I was single and I asked the crowd at a Love It or Leave It show, I was like, Betsy remembers this. I said to the crowd, I was like, I am 40. What should my age range be? And they all said something like, 27 to 53. And then I was like, wait, but how many of you actually think my age range should be set to 53? Or are you just telling me what you think you're supposed to say about the range? You want the range above to be equal to the range below because you want to feel better about yourself You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, that's nice they even thought to do that. My friends are just like, ugh, don't go over 52. Ugh. So that's nice. That's a good, you've got quality people around you.
That's.
I'm sorry that upset you.
No, no, it's a good point about them.
Yeah.
A good group of people.
I know, it's just tough. You don't want you don't want to have to like be taking people to like medical appointments, you know?
But then who's going to love the people who need medical appointments?
Their own age. Their own age.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
These men in their 50s trying to snatch a young gal and then she's got to take care of them. And I don't like that for them.
No, I know. I'm always like, enjoy the great pubic hairs. To some of my exes, where I'm like, have fun with that.
But here's the thing.
But I do believe in everyone dressing and partying how they want.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Into the old age.
Yeah.
I mean, great pubic hairs are the goal. It's that or death. Let's spin it again.
It's a blessing.
Oh. Weezy, you're up.
Okay. Listen, this might seem obvious, but it's not. But like, if you're at the theater, shut your fucking mouth. Why are you talking? Why are you talking? What are you doing? You talk after the show. There's not even an intermission. Like, it's a 90-minute show. It's just like, I've been fighting with people for so long, and I'm sick of yelling, and I'm sick of people talking, and then I have to, you're ruining my time. If it's dark and there's a light on one person over there, that's the only person that should be speaking. And also, you can just laugh. You don't actually have to look at the person next to you and like, should we be laughing? Just like, laugh, shut your mouth, and keep it moving. It just like sickens me. I think I gotta keep talking. Well, I was humiliated recently. I did go to an off-Broadway show and I was yelling at the people in front of me to shut up. And then I realized it was the aunt and the cousins of the performer. And then we were the only ones left in the house seats to meet the performer after. And she's like, come say hi, it's my family. I go, it got volatile. So of course I feel bad. I yelled at this person's family, but it's like, shut the fuck up. Like, I don't understand. It really...
I don't get it either. I don't get that either.
People spend so much money, time getting babysitters, paying for parking, like getting these tickets, getting to this show, and then you're by a babbling motherfucker. Like...
How do people not know that? I'm also surprised.
No, and they act like I'm crazy when I react. I had to yell at someone at the Casey Musgraves concert. I had to yell at someone at a screening of the movie Fire Island that was then going to be on Hulu in 3 hours. It's like, you could have watched shit at home. You could have watched shit at home.
There's something about, I see it like that there's, people have no attention span. We've all ruined our brains. And so people are in the theater and they know, like, even, like, there are people that are just rude. There are rude people. There's always been rude people. But certain kind of new, I was like, kind of like a soft rudeness where it's like, I know I should be quiet, but I just want to say one thing. And it's like, no, bitch, that's the one thing you can't do. Not just one thing. It's, you failed. It's 2 hours, quiet the whole time. If you were talk one time, you didn't kind of do it, you fucked up. Shut the fuck up. Nobody wants your comment. Save it.
And when it's positive, like I saw a play and they kept going, she's incredible. Oh my God, this is good. And it's like, just, you can say it after. Like, she's still going to be good. It's really fucking crazy.
And I went to go see a show, doesn't matter where, but I'll just give the address. No, I'm just kidding. I was with a friend who, in the middle of it, full voice, she goes, I feel like I'm watching like a bad acting class. And I was like, oh my God, that was for, I also sort of admire the fact that when people don't, can not have no awareness of others around them. That's always mesmerizing to me.
Oh yeah. Like, I have another rant. Even... Just don't wear cologne on a fucking flight. How about that?
Yeah, that's dumb too.
So crazy.
Let's spin it again.
So crazy.
Isn't it all kind of preset or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Look, I'm going to get, there's too many pasta shapes. And I know it's just like, and here's the thing about it is what bothers me about it is not that there's so many pasta shapes. In fact, I enjoy many different pasta shapes. It's that we're all meant to pretend that this is fine and for adults. Like, there's no other food. Like, I get the value of different, you know, linguine versus spaghetti versus angel hair. They serve a different function and different shapes of food. I totally understand that part of it. But now we're getting into bow ties, spirals, fusilli. I like all of it. I'm interested in all of it. But we're being, this is Play-Doh. We're playing with our food. This is absurd. Like, these are dinosaurs. These might as well be kid shapes. Like, stop acting like, oh, Italy's the most sophisticated place with the best food in the fucking world. this is children's food.
Wow, that's bold.
But the mini shells, you know, the sauce goes in them. It's nice.
For sure. I don't think it's my best rant. I've done several hundred of these shows.
Tortellini.
I'm putting that one in a, that was like a sub.
But I am impressed.
The night that I'm on is when you do your shitty rant. But I am impressed that you know that you did see the integrity of the difference between spaghetti, angel hair, and linguine. I thought that would be a rage point.
This is the problem with being a liberal, which is I can't help myself but see nuance everywhere.
Yeah.
And midway through my own rant about pasta shapes, I had to say, well, obviously then there's different shapes that serve a different sauces cling to different amount. You have to have, you know, different, you know, bolognese is going to sort of be better for like a tagliatelle. Obviously, I understand that. And so then by the time you get to the end of hearing a liberal talk about an issue, you're like, well, what the fuck do you even believe?
Yeah, because you were talking
about problem is with the fucking liberals. Yeah. This is... I hate myself.
Oh, God.
That's what
cool.
My problem is.
I get it.
I hate myself.
That's what I always say. I hated me first. I win. Yeah, I'm a competitor.
I love a cold pasta salad, but imagining certain noodle shapes cold is like, ugh, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Such an important point.
But I never thought about that. Yeah. I want a pesto fucking pasta salad.
We'll be right back. And we're back. And now another wonderful night draws to a close. But could any small tweaks possibly have made tonight's show any more perfect? Probably not. But we'll find out in a segment we're calling Second Thoughts. Here's how it works. The producers of this program have handed me a list of things I should not have said or done this evening. Lisa and Lauren, if you have any regrets about me or anything you might have said on this show, now is the time to share them. I'll start with the monologue. I laid out a scenario where I'd vote for Trump. I explained that the Epstein joke was better than the JFK joke rather than letting the material speak for itself. I did call Lisa a trans swimmer, which was an odd thing to just say.
Did it bother you?
No, I thought it was fun.
Oh,
and
good.
I was a swimmer, so I was like more excited that he caught that from me.
Oh, you felt seen.
Yeah.
I did suggest that there's a connection between the MMR vaccine and being good at backgammon.
Yeah, I heard that. I heard that. I liked it. Oh, I have so many regrets. What? This is my favorite part of the show, by the way, because I was like, oh my God, you get to do on stage what I do every 10 minutes. I wished I had not. I told myself, don't mention the HBOs, don't mention the training. Just take it in, take the note, lady, and just move on. But instead, I just keep telling everybody, like, guess I got in trouble. And then I sort of retell what I did. And I was thinking, and then as you were talking, I was like, this is a wildly popular show. I was like, I just did it on a wildly popular show. Like the other one, I think people could have missed it. But this one, people are going to really hear it. So yeah. I guess being here. I'm just kidding.
Another thing that I could potentially regret is I did at some point ask, does everyone here need help?
Yeah.
And we do.
Yeah, I've assumed that everybody.
We all do.
We all need help.
Yeah. I
know some people in the audience. I know they do. Yeah.
We can't all be good at everything.
No.
We need help.
Do you have any regrets, Lisa?
Yeah, I don't know. I've been burping my lunch and I hate it. And so that's been really upsetting up here. And that's pretty much it. I've had a good time. I mean, obviously, I wish I talked more about Heated Rivalry, but...
And that's our show. Thank you so much to Lauren Weidman and Lisa Traeger. There are 83 days until the midterms. We'll be back Friday with David Pakman, Jim Rash, and Congressman Ted Lieu. Have a great night, everybody. Love It or Leave It is a Crooked Media production. Our show is produced by Kendra James, Bill McGrath, Kelsey Gante, and me, John Lovett. Our production team includes Hallie Kiefer, Sarah Lazarus, Raman Borsellino, Peter Miller, David Tolles, Claudia Shang, Jay Banks, Gavin Purcell, and Matt DeGroat. And our staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
Hey, it's John. Last year, 2,500 people joined us at Crooked Con for conversations with some of the smartest organizers, least annoying politicians, and most interesting voices in politics about how to fix this mess. We're doing it again, November 5th through the 7th in Washington, D.C. with even more podcast panels and workshops. Plus, there will be drinks, which we'll need after the midterms, no matter which way they go.
Get your tickets at CrookedCon.com, where we'll also announce the lineup. If you're a Friends of the Pod subscriber, a limited number of discounted tickets are still available. Get them before they run out. See you at CrookedCon.